jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 20 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week I'm joined by Faz.
G'day, Marcus. How are you?
And Bryce, welcome back, mate.
G'day, guys. How are you going? It's good to be back.
Now, we've finally hit the final series, the home stretch now. So very exciting times, especially for those playing for the cash leagues. Hopefully those that are not booted out of the top eight of our listeners. But before we have a bit of a chat and run through of our listener questions, let's start as we do each week with a personal update. And I'm going to go first and just get the misery done with. 23.07 was my score for the week. That pushed me back about 1,000 spots. So now sitting about 6,900, and it's first week in a while that I've been halted from my forward charge into, I was hoping, the top five this week, but the top 5K will have to wait for another week yet. Just poor scores all around, really. I had the full premium team playing, which was great, but non-premium scores coming through. Luke Ryan with his 48, Tom Stewart, 74, Matt Crouch, 77, Jeremy Cameron, 68, Robbie Gray, 87. And I didn't have, I guess, McRae was probably a big one that lots of people had. It didn't feel like a terrible week, but most of my premiums didn't fire, and that was enough to see me dip a little bit. Which is unfortunate. Faz, how'd you go, mate?
Even worse, unfortunately. 22.87 for me. Definitely not where I want to be at this point in the year. We had the group chat going before the show, and I think we've decided we all have the same spuds in our team, because I also had Luke Ryan, Tom Stewart, Matty Crouch continues to disappoint. Just trying to salvage what I can at this point. I think if I can get myself back up into the top 10,000 and try and make a little bit of a push from there, that's probably all I can hope for at this stage of the year. Have you got a cheerier tune to sing there, Bryce?
Oh, well, I was in misery until I heard your scores and thanks, sob Bryce. Stories. But thanks for making me feel a little bit better. But I'm still pretty down on the week. Scored 23.39, which wasn't particularly great. Had 6 weeks in a row where I'd gone up the rankings, and this was the first week in a while where I went back down. I had the similar spuds to you guys. Billings, Zach Williams and Crouch were all pretty below par. Also carrying Hearn, so I had to play a rookie on field there, so I got 50. I did have McRae, so that helped a little bit, but I fell down about 1,000 spots to 8,900, but still have a little bit of high hopes to get up towards the 5K mark, which will be a little bit of a success story if it happens to be the case, but I'm going to need a few more injuries with trades in bank for that to happen.
Yeah, I with four in bank, I'm also hoping for injuries. I was hoping it'd be somebody a bit more highly selected than Luke Ryan, who is unfortunately a bit more of a niche selection and 15% of teams. I was hoping maybe a Lloyd would go down. That'd be more helpful, but there we go. It is what it is.
At least you can get rid of Ryan happily.
Yeah, that's right.
Cut that. Been waiting for an excuse. So.
Just rip that scab right off. Before we go to some questions, a quick group update. Our Patreon group has officially got itself a new leader, and we say well done to Matthew's team, the best 22, who's been holding the torch for quite a while. He's dropped to 137th, so still looking pretty good, but that left him open to be overtaken by Seb's team, Geordie Demolition, who moved into 101st on the weekend and is officially now our front runner for the $250 Patreon group prize for overall leader at the end of the year. So 4 weeks left on that, and certainly going to be a close contest with a few nipping at their heels. In terms of a top score for our Patreon group this week, it's Aussie's team, Bonsai Warriors, who topped the list with 26.05. Unfortunately, not quite enough to overtake Aiden's Stargazing Goats, who scored 26.82 in round 17, but still a really, really good score from Aussie. So congrats to our high scorers for the week. And with that, we'll get on to this week's hot topic, which in the last few weeks has been sort of all about injuries, really, and this week's no different. The bloke we've already talked about, Luke Ryan, we've got a few questions about him, and we'll start with this one from Roger Brooke, one of our patrons. He needs a replacement for Luke Ryan. He's got 60K in bank, three trades, and he's asked about Daniel Rich and Tom Stewart as a couple of options. First up, just a quick update on Luke Ryan's injury. Do either of you, are you in the know in terms of how many weeks he might miss or how serious it is?
All I saw was hamstring and weeks plural. So I think at that point in the season where we have 4 weeks to go, and I know, Bryce, you were flouting your great bench cover there, which probably is doing a bit better than Lachie Young and Mitch Hinge in my team right now. So I think for a lot of teams, a multiple-week injury in the back line is a must trade, because for me that means at least two donuts unless Lachie Young can do something miraculous.
I read somewhere that maybe it was a bit of a corky, but the fact that he sat out the whole game with ice on the hamstring, Ross said that if it is a hamstring, I think this was post-game, that they would be looking at hopefully the three-week standard. So the only chance he's got is that maybe it's that corky, but that seems a bit unlikely. So certainly also looking at trading him as well. Now, between Daniel Rich and Tom Stewart, we've got a couple of well-priced options that so far this year have been pretty close to the top six averaging defenders. They've just slipped with a couple poor scores here and there. Their averages have now slipped to, I think, 96.9 for each of them. But they're 460K or thereabouts. And with the run home, Tom Stewart has Frio this week, North Melbourne the week after, Brisbane, and then finishes with Carlton. So it doesn't look too bad there. And Daniel Rich, he's got Western Bulldogs, Gold Coast, Geelong, and then Richmond. So a slightly tougher draw, but Gold Coast to also look forward to there. Daniel Rich has scored his first ton in 5 weeks on the weekend against Hawthorn with a 111. He hasn't been doing too badly outside of that. His next two lower scores in that five-week run are 66 and 88. But Tom Stewart as well, you know, a couple of scores in the 70s, definitely not ideal. Prior to that point, he'd only had one for the first 17 rounds of the season. Who do you like out of the two of them, Bryce?
Yeah, I've been running some similar numbers to you, Marcus, and see that they're actually pretty hard to split, to be honest. I mean, they're averaging about the same, 96, 97 mark. They're priced about the same, 455 and 462. They've actually got pretty similar scoring profiles as well. Rich's lowest scores have been 66, 78 and 76. And Tom Stewart's have been 78, 79 and 74. But the thing for Tom Stewart is his two most recent scores have been his low, like in his low three. So his last two have been 79 and 74. So I don't know whether it's a little bit more concern with him and his scoring profile, whether he's had a little bit of a different role in the Geelong team. I haven't been watching them too closely. But I think that I'd be leaning slightly more towards Rich, given recent scoring in the last three, 88, 94, 111. But then there's also the fixture consideration, where Rich has a little bit more difficult fixture to what Tom Stewart is. But, I mean, Stewart scored 74 in the last game and they played Sydney, so maybe it doesn't mean a huge deal. At the end of the day, I think you just pick the guy that you like the most. Injury profiles are probably about the same as well. Faz, do you have any preferences out of those two?
Well, luckily enough for me, I brought in Tom Stewart 2 weeks ago, so I've been fortunate enough to have two of his lowest three scores of the year.
Okay, now we know what's going on.
So just a word of warning to all those out there deciding between the two of these players, I probably will be bringing in Daniel Rich this week, so I'm not sure there is a good option left.
Can I throw one more in there? And I'm looking at your screen now, Faz. You already have him, so it doesn't help you. But Rory Laird, similar price bracket, 466K.
I think if you don't have Laird, I'd be jumping on that straight away as an alternative to either Stewart or Rich. Mm. They've all averaged pretty similar numbers this year, but Laird has just got that incredible history behind him. I know that at the start of the year we were very closely considering him, and I think the only reason we didn't end up pulling the trigger was, you know, we said, well, how on earth could a guy improve from, you know, what was it, two seasons of, you know, I think it was 110 into 115 or something like that. It just seemed impossible for him to keep rising. And I guess, you know, this season has proved that to be the case, that he's had a bit of a quieter year, whether Brodie Smith being back in the team has played a part in that. It's hard to tell, but I think with the real pedigree behind him of scoring history, I think if you didn't have Rory Laird, he would be a clear number one for me out of the three options here. And then I'd probably put Rich above Stewart. It could be sour grapes for having Stewart for the last 2 weeks, but I do like the Gold Coast game that he's got coming up in a couple of weeks. I think that I know that Geelong have Carlton in the final round of the year, but Carlton are looking at quite a bit better in this second patch of the season since David Teague took over, whereas Gold Coast, it was really only Essendon that they gave the scare to this most recent weekend. And outside of that, they've looked pretty hopeless. And I think that a player of Daniel Rich's calibre could really go to town on them.
Yeah, I think I'd go Laird 1, Rich 2 and Stewart 3 as well. And my reasoning for Rich over Stewart is Rich is in about half the teams that Stewart is in, which is pretty surprising considering Rich has managed to keep this up for most of the year. So I think a few had been burnt before, including ourselves. I think 3 years ago we recommended Rich in the back line. So the fact that he's in less than 10% of teams is pretty nice as well. Now, another question here from David Bailey, one of our patrons. And this one's more broadly about sort of how many trades you would have to instantly trade a injured premium, especially if you have bench cover. So with Luke Ryan, Faz, you basically said that, you know, if you're going to be injured for a couple of games, that's you know, as good as previously being out for four, you know, earlier on in the season. Is there a trade boundary that you'd say, like, oh, I've got too few trades, as long as I can cover him, I won't bother trading, even if, you know, a player's injured?
I'm probably thinking right down at the one mark, but I guess you might be a better place to answer this, Bryce, because you do have the bench cover. Who do you have as your bench cover right now?
Yeah, good question. And I think it does depend on that bench cover, whether you do have it. So I have a live – or actually, I did have a live bench player, which was Isaac Quainer, but I understand he's gone down with an injury as well. So he'll be out for multiple weeks as well. So that puts my bench cover down to nil. But let's, for argument's sake, say I did have an Isaac Quainer and potentially expecting a 50 each week for an injured premium. Three trays, I'd probably just trade that premium straight out and get a premium in.
Especially if he's out for like 3/4 weeks. I think anything but one trade, you'd probably move on that. If he was out for 2 weeks and he has a chance of coming back and you can cover him, then potentially with two trades, you'd just hold. With three, you probably still would go ahead with trading. But it's going to also depend on how exposed your other bench positions are, et cetera. So, but I think that's enough of an indicative view. Now, if we were looking at a situation where you didn't have any cash in bank, so you had to look at players cheaper than Luke Ryan, that's going to make things a little bit more interesting. So we've had a few options thrown up by some of our listeners. Steve, our patron, has asked about Hartlett or Cade Simpson. And Dylan Royal from Facebook asked about Sicily and Birchall. So all four of those options are under Luke Ryan's price of about $437. All have previously been premiums. Sicily seems like the front runner or the most obvious one. Is that sort of taking things too simplistically, or should we be analysing the others a little bit more closely? What do you reckon?
From my perspective, I think Sicily is the obvious choice. He's played every game this season. His role's been a little bit up and down, but that's what you're going to get for this price point at $432K. I think for a lot of people, they might already have Sicily, and so would be looking outside of Sicily for options. Of the couple that you put up, I mean, at this price point, they're all going to be fairly speculative. But, I mean, Hamish Hartlett has had a pretty good return after being out of the game for a while. He's priced at $399K. He's managed to average 85 in the seven games that he's played. He's priced at 79, so he's actually pretty good value. One thing I was looking at with Hartlett is his average at Adelaide Oval. He's got another two games, Adelaide Oval to come. And Adelaide Oval, he's averaged 95 across five games, which is pretty reasonable. And his high scores have all been at Adelaide Oval as well. He's had 91, 130, 86 and 107. So I like him as a pretty good option. He's got a fairly high ceiling. The only risk with him is potentially can he play out the remainder of the season without being rested. But, yeah, he's had pretty good form so far. Of the other options mentioned, Cade Simpson seems to have started to ramp up. He's missing with injury. The last four, he's gone 76, 70, 87 and 93, 93 being the most recent. So I think that he's been a previous premium. He's a pretty good option at 418K. Birchall, he's had an 87 and then a game off and then an 87. It seems to be a huge risk with him. Not particularly keen on him unless you did have some bench cover to go with that selection and you could use that money elsewhere in your team to upgrade. Otherwise, he seems like a pretty risky option. The only other one that I'd throw out there is Jeremy Howe. So the last couple of weeks when Moore's been out of the side, he's gone 90 and 100. So he could be a little bit of a punt on the way home. He's averaged in the 90s before and has been a reasonable player. So he's potentially down the list as far as punts go. But, yeah, he might be tempting for some people. What do you guys think of some of those options?
I definitely agree with your sentiments there, Bryce. I think that Sicily seems like the leading candidate, although definitely worth noting that he is in quite a few teams, so won't be an option for a lot of teams. I think I would also put a line through Grant Birchall. I think that the risk of being rested for the remainder of the season is just too great. And, you know, of course, the fewer games we have left, the bigger impact a rest happens. So if he misses one of the four games, it's a real disaster for your trade-in. And just on Cade Simpson, I think you might have just missed his most recent score there,
Ooh,
Bryce.
He did.
He had 125 on the weekend against Adelaide. So don't mind him as a little smoky. He's obviously got a great pedigree from his career. I guess also worth mentioning, though, that the 125 on the weekend was only his second ton of the season. There's a few 90s sprinkled in there as well, but it's a bit of a risky one. So Hamish Hartlett seems like probably a bit safer of a pick than Cade Simpson. I'd probably rank them Sicily 1, Hamish Hartlett 2, Cade Simpson 3, and Birchall a fairly distant 4th. And I don't mind the suggestion there of Jeremy Howe as well. Obviously, takes some great intercept marks, and that's what Darcy Moore was doing very well for Collingwood this year. So if you felt like a bit of a smoky pick, I don't mind Jeremy Howe as an option as well.
Yeah, definitely Sicily 1. I think where I probably differ a little bit from you guys is with Birchall. I think you raise a good point, Bryce, that you do want some cover before you bring somebody like him in. But in the case where you do have cover, I'd rate him pretty highly, mostly because I don't really care too much for the other prospects. Like, it feels like you're picking an 85 player no matter which way you slice it, and you're just hoping for a good run of form. And in that scenario, it seems like it's a good opportunity to go with Birchall, who's almost that same type but comes with a 200k discount, and you could potentially, if not employ that straight away, use that to pretty good effect for any future injury trades where you might have another Luke Ryan in the future, but this time be able to trade him to a Lockie Whitfield instead. So I'd probably have him a little bit higher, especially if I have cover. Otherwise, I really do like that Howe selection. Hartlett has come back from injury. Simpson has experienced injury. Like, it's always a risk trading in injured players. It's not like there's zero risk either. Hartlett scored 250s in the last month, which is definitely something to keep in mind. Howe's had a pretty awful season so far, but his price is so low, really, because he scored a 23 in round 14 against the Dogs. Obviously, missed some games after that. And so his 90 and 100 on return that you've referenced so far, Bryce, has meant that he's dropped an additional about 10, 15K after that 23. Pretty good value otherwise, because I think you take out that 23 in his last four games, 82, 84, 90 and 100. So it's, you know, fairly similar to the Hartlett type profile where you're more looking at 80s than anything else.
And Gold Coast coming up this weekend as well. So nice little introduction to your team, I'd say, if you do decide on how.
All right, next question on trade strategy, and this question is here from Michael Bearstow on Facebook. He's got a full premium side and 5 trades left in the bank, but he's stagnating a little bit in terms of the ranking, and he's asking how to best use those to his advantage to move up if he cares about the overall rankings. Upgrade an underperforming player like Chris Peeney, Sicily, Matt Bradcrouch, or upgrade your bench so you can loophole a Hawkins, Jeremy Howe type, etc. So I am pretty strongly in the camp of loopholing in that particular scenario. I think that when you're trading premium for slightly better premium, it's a risky proposition. And with 4 weeks to go, the risk is that the net effect might be, 20, 30 points. It may be negative points. Sometimes you just pick up a player as he's about to go for a bad run of form. I like the loophole option instead, because not only does it put an extra premium on your bench in case of injury, but you can also, try and selectively carve out your worst scorer, but take them if they end up scoring well. So I'm very much in the loophole camp at the moment. I have 4 trades. I was deciding between trading, Heaney and Gray out for Merritt. Like, if I had done that, I think I would have ended up with a pretty poor trade on the weekend. And the other option was maybe downgrade to Hawkins. At least that would have unlocked 150K. So I'd say if you're going to trade an underperforming player, maybe as a cash grab to fund another upgrade, if you're moving from underperforming premium to discount bargain premium, at least it's like same profile for same profile, but you're using it as a downgrade opportunity. Otherwise, I really just don't like traditionally side swapping premiums, especially if they're the same price point. What do you reckon, Bryce?
It's a tricky one. This has been in my consideration set for a few days. I'm in a similar position of trades where I could either bring in a low-priced player to loophole, such as a Hawkins, or maybe a 490K-ish type midfielder, maybe like a Sebros, and then pick the best score there. I guess it depends on the players you have in that worst position in your forward, like an F6. Do you have a player that has a high ceiling and could go on a good run, and you want to pick the best scores and therefore loophole? That could turn out advantageous. But if you have a player which is kind of like a consistent, flatline, terrible kind of average, like the 80, 90, maybe like a Dowhouse, which doesn't seem to have much of a ceiling, I'm actually favouring the option there to go up to someone like a Marshall, one of the big guns, who's definitely going to get you a better score each week. I mean, the difference between Dowhouse and Marshall at the moment is maybe circa 30 points. 4 times 30 over the last 4 weeks, the 120. So you're actually getting a little bit more overall there. The problem is whether you can get up there with your 2 trades. So I'd be looking to downgrade like a Chole or a Dylan Clark to a 102K guy, and then going Dowhouse up to a Marshall. If that kind of player can't be achieved, like the top line guys, I'm probably more favorable to the loophole options, particular guys that have that high ceiling that you can loophole onto the field. So I've been looking at Tom Hawkins, has a reasonable run in the last 4 games. You can loophole him with someone like Jeremy Cameron. I don't like the idea of trading out Jeremy Cameron to get up to someone like a Marshall, because he has the potential to go a big score. So on the weekend, I think he was travelling at about 70 at half time and somehow managed to get below 70 for the entire game. But that half
so angry
was it was very frustrating. I mean, he can potentially burn you on the run home if you trade him out, and I don't like that situation, and that's why I like to favour that loophole option most of the time. So a few random thoughts that I've been going through with a similar amount of trades in the bank.
Next, we're going to talk about some potential luxury trades, and the Jeremy Cameron topic ties in quite nicely because we're going to a question here from one of our patrons, The Revolution, who's looking at trading out Cameron for Marshall. So exactly the scenario talking about, Bryce, about going for that top line premium. He'd be looking to downgrade in order to be able to afford Marshall. But the problem is he only has three trades left and he's going for the overall. Now, does this fall into the too risky camp, Faz?
I'd say it does. To do two trades just to be upgrading one position on the field, and despite the analysis that you ran before, Bryce, of, you know, Dalhouse to Rowan Marshall, I think applies pretty similarly to Jez Cameron in terms of, you know, could be 30 points per game. You know, that's 120 points across the remainder of the season. But I think what in this particular scenario, what also needs to be weighed against that is, you know, what happens if, you know, Max Gawn goes down next week, or, you know, even Max Gawn going down round 22 and he's just not playing round 23, you know, that could be 120 points right there.
Yep.
So I think that the trade, that just doesn't seem like a good use of your trades to be using two trades to essentially sideways swap. I know it is, you know, an upgrade in a sense because Rowan Marshall will likely score better than Jez Cameron, but there's also the chance that Jez goes big in a couple of these games and you're not even getting a big points boost in any of this. So I think that if you are more like the previous questioner at sort of five trades, then maybe it's something that you'd consider, but three down to one trade, that just seems to be cutting it too fine to me. I'd be saving those trades for, you know, when you need them rather than sort of luxury upgrades.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was going to say that the trade boundary seems like it's beyond that, going down to one trade in order to do the side swap of Jeremy Cameron for Marshall. One thing I have been looking at is Rowan Marshall's run home, and I can understand why people are trying to get him in. So, I mean, he's had a pretty sick run since just before the bye. He's averaging 131 across about 8 or 9 games. He just went 125 against Melbourne and Max Gawn, and he has Adelaide, Fremantle, Carlton and Sydney to come. So I just can't see him averaging much below the 110. He's had a phenomenal like run of form, and I can't see how that's slowing down. So I can understand why people are trying to bring him in. That trade boundary for that scenario with the Cameron to Marshall going down to one trade is probably on the too risky side. But if you had four trades, probably start to really consider it. I mean, it's a real tough one. Where are you sitting, Marcus?
Yeah, I think it's tough just because you can no longer look at it in the same way we normally evaluate trades, right? When we look at trades, we normally go, all right, we reckon over 10 rounds this person will do this and this person will do this. And we're going to be reasonably accurate at predicting what they're going to do over 10 rounds. Over 4 rounds, I mean, that's the real challenge, because if you look at just his average, like even if Marshall averages 110 for the next, or even 120 for the next 4 weeks, you compare that to Jeremy Cameron, who's currently averaging 90 on the run home, at 30 points per round, and that's like I think being quite generous, right? Saying that there's a 30-point difference in average for 4 rounds, that's only 120 points across 4 weeks. And that can really easily be chipped into if Jeremy Cameron has a big score. And I think people may have forgotten, but as we traded Jeremy Cameron in, one of the nice little bonuses, especially for league players, is Jeremy Cameron plays against Gold Coast in the grand final as well, right? Something else to think about. So that's the really tough one, is that I'm just throwing darts at a random board if I was to try and make that pick, because you're really hoping that over the 4 rounds that whoever you trade out is going to have a bad one, and whoever you trade in is also going to have a good one above and beyond what their average would be. You're almost hoping just for outlier score either way. You're hoping Cameron has a 30 or a 40, and you're hoping that Marshall has a 150, so that, you know, regardless of the other games, it sort of averages out to be worthwhile. But that's just very hard to predict. And so I'd say even if in a scenario where you have 4, I probably wouldn't go ahead with it. You know, having said that, if you're in a do or die scenario from a league point of view, would I be heaps more confident in running with Rowan Marshall instead of Jeremy Cameron for a league victory? Absolutely. So potentially the overall is a little bit trickier than the league stakes. All right. Well, next we're going to just quickly chat about some rookies. Again, we're not going to spend too long on these because you're basically just looking for whatever downgrade target if you need some cash at this point in the season. So we've only got one backline rookie, Francis Watson. He is on the bubble, 73 and 61, his two games for West Coast so far. We've got Dalton Langlands on the bubble, is the standout being a mid-forward DPP player for St Kilda, 123,900, 66 and 71, his two scores. In the midfield, probably the standout is Will Snelling for Essendon, 117,000. He scored 49 and 83 in his two games. There's Riley West on debut as well, who scored 69 for the Dogs at 117,000 as well, if you were a little bit more hopeful about his job security. Josh DeLuca is also on the bubble for Carlton, but he's at 150K, so you wouldn't want to spend extra cash on him. In the forward line, you've got three rookies on the bubble as well. Rule out Riley Stoddart, who scored 21 twice and is more expensive at 137,000. You've got Tyson Stengel, who played round 17, then got dropped and then came back for round 19. So some question marks about job security, but he's on the bubble at 124,000. And then Hayden McLean, 102,000 basement price rookie if you're looking for an absolute cheapie, for Sydney, 60 and 65 as a forward rookie. So won't spend too much more time dissecting any of these because really not trying to get them for points on field this week. It's just in case. All right, to a quick overrated, underrated, and this week the question we have here is posed by @5Jester. And he's saying, what the F do we do with Matt Crouch? And that's exactly how I feel at the moment.
Matt Crouch.
I just don't think, you know, we've talked about side swapping already. I just don't think you can be in a situation where you realistically side swap him and have confidence that it's going to work out well. If anything, you're just doing it in frustration. But I thought it's a perfect opportunity to run him through the underrated, overrated ruler, mostly so I can yell overrated at the top of my voice toward him.
Just it's therapy. Get out the frustration right now, all together.
Bryce, have we severely overrated this bloke, mate? What's going on?
I don't know what's going on. I think it's – I just don't know. It's been awful. It really has been awful. I think we had higher hopes when we started with him. We've run the whole season with him, and we just got to hope that he knocks out a few decent scores in the last 4 weeks, along with the Crows winning. So overrated for sure. Won't be starting him next year, maybe never again. But yeah, it's been awful.
I was just going to say that, Bryce. I think it's overrated in perpetuity for Matt Crouch. I cannot see a situation where he comes back into my team unless he's and misses two seasons with injury and he's 100,000. I'd still be second guessing that selection.
Yeah, I think the frustrating part is Sloan has had a good season in parts. Matt Crouch at the start was averaging 110 at the very least. And then you've got Brad Crouch doing well as well. Like, it doesn't feel like it's a season where Adelaide midfielders are, you know, particularly under huge amounts of pressure. I don't remember Matt Crouch getting tagged a huge amount across the games. Like, there's no particular reason why he should be scoring the way he is. I'm hoping it's some sort of niggle that's causing it. I wonder whether or not Brad Crouch is taking away some of the points that Matt Crouch gets. When I see the two of them, I don't know if I made the comment to you, Faz, but it's just like they only score points like doing really almost redundant disposals that travel like 5 or 10 meters to each other. Like
it's all uncontested.
You know what I mean, like
still playing backyard footy.
Yeah, kick it long. You know, like do something. You're on the wing. Yeah. Be more dangerous with your disposal. So, you know, Matt Crouch always got a crap load of the pill, and so he didn't have to do too much with it to score points. But this is where, you know, when you look like a player at, like Bontempelli, he's like the opposite. He struggled to get that many disposals when they played him in the forward line or whatever. But, like, when he scored like a beast. I'm going to be a lot more wary of getting sucked into types that just rack a lot of the pill up. especially if you're not certain about their top eight credentials. I think if Adelaide finish in the top four, they'd probably end up with a couple of their big 110 averages. But realistically, like with Adelaide currently sitting teetering at the eight at the moment, I'm sorry to say that, Bryce, but it's not very conducive to Supercoach scoring either. All right, we'll finish with some captaincy options and then wrap up the show. I'm going to go through the four favorites that I've highlighted from a little bit of research. So my top vice captaincy option for the week, Max Gawn. Against Richmond, he's obviously going to do pretty well. Richmond light on in the ruck stakes. I think Nank did return to the VFL last week, but don't know that he's ready for AFL yet. Gawn's last three against Richmond, 160, 151, and earlier this year, 145. So, insane. And then the second vice-captaincy option, very, very close, Dangerfield against Freo. Now, I know everyone wants to go Gawn, Grundy, Grundy, Gawn, but Dangerfield loves playing Freo. He averages 125 against them, which is pretty unheard of. Six of his last nine games against Freo, six of his last nine, insane, 135 plus. 145, 187, 188, 135, 138, 145. Six of his last nine scores against Freo. The three poorer scores, 125, 72, 94. So not even that bad. So he certainly likes playing Freo. And then for captaincy option, you've got Grundy against Gold Coast, which looks pretty good. The last time he played Gold Coast, he scored 136. And McRae will be hard to go past as well. Brisbane Lions, he loves playing them. His last four against them, 121, 162, 156, and earlier this year, 135. Yeah, I think I'll struggle to choose. I'm tossing up between Gawn, Dangerfield as the VC, and then Grundy as the backup against Gold Coast.
No McRae?
I don't even have McRae. Otherwise,
oh no, you don't have McRae.
No. Thanks, Brass. But I honestly was thinking about having McRae as the top option for the week. Like, look at that stat line, 121.
Yeah, no, it is pretty nice. But yeah, you had me at Gawn Grundy. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm not gonna
overthink it.
All right, I'll just cancel this segment. I'll just cancel this. All right. Well, we know you've got some very nice curry waiting for you, Bryce. So thank you for joining us while there's hot food on the go. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with heading into the final series?
Oh, it's very exciting. Finals time, week one. Obviously, just put it all out there. If you need to trade to win, do that. Keep an eye on your opponent's score, how it's tracking. Make the trades if you need to. If you're going for overall, just be really consider about what you're doing with your last trades and don't leave yourself too high and dry for the last couple of weeks, which could mean multi-week donuts. But, good luck. Hopefully there's a little bit of carnage, but not too much.
All right. To our listeners, just a quick last bit of advice around finals trading. If you are going for the league finals, you don't have to torch all your trades or you don't have to use a trade every week for the finals if that's what you hold your trades for. Have a look at your opponents and make an evaluation week to week as to whether or not you need to trade. If you have a double chance this week, it might be a greater reason to be conservative because you still have another chance to make it through to the finals the week after, even if you lose. So try and stretch out your last few trades as long as you can. You don't have to burn them all to try and make finals. You can keep a few aces up the sleeve for the last couple of weeks. All right, and with that, we'll sign off for another week. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye. Don't